Welcome to Bicycle Retail Radio, the bicycle industry podcast that brings retailers, vendors, advocates, and thought leaders to the mic for honest discussions about the latest issues facing retailers while taking an in-depth look at the person within the profession.
I'm Heather Mason, MBDA President. The conversation today is with Steve Kaczmarek, founder of Borealis Fat Bikes. I met Steve at an Interbike show in 2014, and we have been friends since. Listen in and learn how the fat bike market has progressed, how you can increase fat bike sales, thoughts on the current state of the industry, and more as Steve joins us from Fat Bike Worlds. It's making me want to take to the trail. All right, Steve, thank you for coming on the podcast.
All right, hang on. Thanks for having me. This is really fun. It's been a while since I've last seen you.
Yeah, right. I'm excited to have you on the podcast. Listeners, friends, Borealis Fat Bikes. I'm a huge personal fan. As Steve just mentioned, it's been a while since we've seen each other. We'll dive into that in a second. But fat bikes have been evolving over the past many years, welcoming diversity and where we can go and on what terrain. And while many retailers have witnessed thriving sales, some as of late are reporting a little bit different report on what sales are doing. So I thought it would be fun to catch up with a good friend of mine, see where fat bikes are at. And yeah, this conversation is going to be good. So when was it? Was it Interbike, like 2013, Steve?
I think it was. We were, I think, all of a year old at that time. And yeah, you were with Eddie Merck, right? And had the booth next to us. So we had lots of time during the downtime to initially just meet each other and talk. And if you remember, I was able to buy a really cool road bike from you guys for my wife. So that was fun.
Yeah. And I think I picked up a Crestone from you.
Yeah.
We really got along. Yeah. In the middle of the desert. It was super fun. So yesterday, I think you mentioned to me you're on the road to Fat Bike Worlds. And I think maybe it's okay if we tell the listeners that you're on the bus with the trailer with 30 bikes and two prototype E fat bikes. Talk to me about what's happening here.
Yeah, I'm in New Richmond. We actually just pulled in. We're at the New Richmond Golf Club. The demo day is today, and then the race is tomorrow. And then there's kind of a crit and kids race on Sunday. And you're right. Yeah, we've got a big coach and we pull a 20-foot trailer behind and we've got about 30 bikes and lots of stands and banners and swag and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it's quite a production and I fly my whole team out here. So it's one of the events that they always look forward to every year.
That sounds fabulous. That sounds, I can't imagine like the rig pulling in. People just must make a large presence. What? Two prototype E fat bikes?
Yeah. So I'll be totally honest. I was kind of against the whole e-bike thing. If you go back 5-6 years ago, and it was about 2-3 years ago where I said, I think we got to do this. And, you know, there really are some good reasons for e-bikes, as I'm sure everybody is figuring out. So if I want to ride with my wife, she can be on the e-bike and I can be on a regular bike. But if I'm riding with my son, he's on the regular bike and I'm on the e-bike. And, you know, just anybody that wants to get out, go a little farther, it gives you range. You know, if coaches want to keep up with their athletes and talk so that they're not out of breath while they're trying to coach, there's a lot of good reasons for it. And the reality is, just from a pure motivation standpoint, it's a lot easier to go get motivated and say, yeah, I'm going to take a lap on the e-bike than it is like, oh, I got to just be on a regular bike. So we started the development 2-3 years ago. And then due to supply chain issues, we couldn't get the batteries, the motors, the computer. A lot of it had to do with computer chips, as we know. But yeah, we've got two prototypes. One was what I'm going to call a Gen 1. The second one is the final working model, which it's the wrong color and a couple of other things, but we're launching in September and it'll be called the Keystone because we always name something after all of our bikes are named after something in Colorado. And yeah, it's really cool. It's fun.
I love that. I'm just thinking back to, you know, you mentioned year one when we met to where we are now. And Borealis for me kind of set the bar high on what a fat bike could be. I mean, we're talking premium frames, premium componentry, taking fat bike to just the lightness of the bike to a whole nother level. For me, it really, you know, when I bought my Crestone, it really opened up a whole nother world to me, being that I'm in the Northeast. Now I can go out on the trail. And I feel like once people saw the bike I had compared to maybe some of these heavier fat bikes, it definitely changed the game. The last 2 years, I'm sure, you know, with COVID and the supply issues, did it affect it a lot? How did it affect you guys and your brand? I mean, I imagine bringing some prototypes bike. You just mentioned that. Anything else?
So, yeah, the last 2 years, honestly, were phenomenal for Borealis. I took a gamble. That's one of the luxuries we have as a small company and as being the sole owner. When things started shutting down, if we can all remember back to early 2020, I honestly was thinking this might be it. And nothing happened in that January, February, March timeframe. And then April came around and the phone didn't stop ringing for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as the phone started ringing in that first part of April, I decided I'm just going to order a whole bunch of everything, thinking the outdoor recreation is just going to explode. And as it turned out, in 20, 21, and 22, we had the three best years in the history of Borealis. We had supply where nobody else did. We couldn't build them fast enough. The downside to all of that is, just like toilet paper, everybody was hoarding and now there's enough. And so our inventory position is larger than I would prefer, but we're actually in good shape. We had a great 2022 and we're optimistic about 23, but it's going to have a little bit of a downturn just simply because there's too much supply right now. And I think that's across all categories, not just fat bike.
Yeah, the entire inventory or the entire industry is facing that. How did your retailer footprint, did that expand over the last 2 years, or did you just focus on the relationships you already had in place and making sure they had bikes?
Both, really. So from a pure numbers of dealers, we probably quadrupled. And there were a lot of companies that couldn't get anything, whether it was road, mountain. And as I mentioned, we had a large inventory, so we were able to capitalize on that. A really, really interesting thing happened about 3 years ago, right at the time COVID was hitting. Specialized drops out of the fat bike category. So they no longer offer the Fat Boy. And we found that out, reached out to all of those Specialized dealers, predominantly in the northern parts of the US, and said, we'd love to work with you. And we actually had to meet with Specialized. And they said, because we only do fat bikes, we are not a competitor. If we had had a road bike or a gravel or a mountain bike, they would not have done this deal. So we picked up, 60, 70 Specialized shops, and Specialized Corporate, which used to be our biggest competitor, is now one of our biggest customers. So it's kind of fun how things have changed.
I like that. That's a really positive story. You've built up a phenomenal brand and you really have impacted so many people, gotten so many people introduced to the benefits of a fat bike and just expanding their cycling season. I want to know what you were doing pre-Borealis. Like, how did this all come about? Where did the vision come to start the brand?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I was in packaging, had sold a couple of packaging companies, had some nice exits, and I was 43 at the time. So that was about 16 years ago. And then started teaching at, some of the colleges and universities in Colorado Springs. And there was a student that I met there that was working with 907, which is a competitive fat bike brand headquartered up in Alaska. And so he and I started talking, and one thing led to another, and Borealis was born. To be quite honest, the goal initially was for him to buy me out when he graduated, but the company got big, and so I had to buy him out. And at that time, I was a business person, not a bike guy, and he was the bike guy. And I'm happy to say, 10 years later, I know a lot about bikes, especially fat bikes.
So that's bike guy.
Yeah, that's the good news. So yeah, it just, it was initially a hobby that we had kind of big aspirations. We thought we would sell $200,000 or $300,000 worth of bikes in year one. We sold almost $3 million in our first year. It was crazy. That show, when we met, I think we went home with over $1 million in credit card receipts, because at that time it was pay in advance. So it was a pretty spectacular show.
I mean, the product is so different, like the lightest, most technically advanced fat bikes. I mean, how did you envision that? Like, how did that come about, though? Like, it's phenomenal.
So you have to go back to really 2012. At that time, there weren't any carbon fiber fat bikes on the market anywhere in the world. And so, when we were originally developing the vision, it was all about, how do we get to a super lightweight bike? Because fat bikes had been around for a long time. There's a lot of debate as to where they started. I think generally it had to have started up in Alaska, but I don't know. There's places in Canada and France or somewhere out there all fighting over it, but it wasn't us. But what we did do was introduce the first carbon fiber fat bike in the world production model. And it was literally 12 pounds lighter than anything else on the market at that time. As you've experienced, if you ride a heavy steel fat bike, it's okay. But if you get onto a super light, you know, Borealis, it's a game changer. It just, that's the hardest part for us, because there's so many people that got on the old fat bikes that were heavy and didn't have some of the new technology. And they're like, yeah, I've tried it. I don't understand what the big deal is. And I have to beg and plead for them to get on one of our bikes. I'm like, please just try it. It's different. And once they do, then they're like, oh, I get it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Walking away from that Interbike show, I mean, you said a million in receipts of that, you know, the prepay days. Awesome. Right. So right. Yeah. You must realize that getting the retailers on these bikes, getting people to experience it, as you're just saying now, is a game changer. So did you do a demo? Like, how did you build up your retailer base and get the bikes out there in the early days?
So in the early days, it wasn't all that dissimilar than kind of the COVID days. Everybody wanted the carbon fiber. It was easy for the shops that already knew about fat bikes to pick up our brand. And, you know, unfortunately, if you go back to that day, as fast as we picked up 350 dealers in a couple of months, it was just insane. We also lost a lot of those dealers just as fast because Specialized wanted in, Trek wanted in, Surly, Salsa, Pivot, Cannondale, I mean, and the list goes on and on. Everybody introduced a fat bike. And so a lot of those brands would say, oh, if you want our road bikes for the summer, you got to take our fat bikes for the winter. And a lot of the purchasing power that they have to diversify products on their floor really is left up to the suppliers who have some pretty big market power. So we had to kind of shift. One of the things that we started doing was selling direct to consumer in non-dealer territories. We have a really cool dealer contract today where if a bike is sold online in a dealer territory, they get 100% margin that they normally would get. And they love that. That way we're not competing against them. They get full disclosure. They put the bike together. They hand it off to the customer, and with the hope of selling a helmet and pedals and clothing or saddles or whatever. But when we sell it direct to a consumer, the bikes are 100% assembled at our shop, but then we have to take them apart to a certain extent to get them into two boxes. And not everybody is comfortable putting the bike together, even though we have a video and we provide the tooling. But we say, take it to your local shop. And what we tell them is, tell them if they're interested in becoming a dealer, they should call me. And so we actually pick up a lot of dealers in those direct-to-consumer territories, and then it becomes a dealer territory, which is really our goal.
Yeah. I mean, that's similar to what we used to do with Mercs. And I love, accept like the full credit back to the retailer, which is amazing. Thank you for that. Yeah. So are you still looking for retailers? Like if a retailer listening was to call you right now, are you still building out the dealer network?
Yes. So our goal right now is to do roughly 1,500 bikes, non-e-bikes, a year. That's kind of our sweet spot. That's about what we did last year. And we will increase that. We just don't want to have so much inventory that the spring sell-off happens. And so right now we have the ability to probably pick up another 20 or 30 dealers, but we do it very strategically. We try not to oversaturate certain markets. And right now, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of inventory, so we would be super happy to bring on new dealers.
Where is the U.S. company located and where are you warehousing? I actually don't even know that.
We're 100% in Colorado Springs, which actually is a really great market. As you know, Colorado is famous for bike brands. You know, we've got a lot of, you know, Yeti is out here, Moots is out here, Gorilla Gravity is out here. You know, it's just, it's a really nice place and the trails are mind-blowing. And what's cool from a manufacturing standpoint is shipping costs out of Colorado are actually very, very reasonable, simply because everything comes into Colorado. There's not a lot of manufacturing that goes out other than beer. There's a lot of beer that comes out of Coors and Golden. But it's a nice little spot for us. And getting bicycle talent for our production and sales side has really been wonderful. We've got some amazing people.
Yeah, I'm imagining that. So we talked a little bit about your expansion into the e-bike market of fat bikes, but just backing up and looking at the fat bike market in general, I feel like we're starting to see an evolution. Like we went from sand and snow, and now I'm seeing, you know, as like adventure vehicles for hunting or fishing. What are you seeing in the fat bike market that we might want to be aware of?
As I mentioned earlier, everybody got in, all the major players got in. A number of them have left. As I mentioned, Specialized is out. And I have a what I call my happy list. So every time a major manufacturer like Cannondale exited, so Cannondale gets up on my happy list and then Specialized goes out. And so I have this list. There's been an opening for us to really pick up new dealers and maintain the brand. One of the things that we do is you can go to our website, fatbike.com, and you literally can build your bike. So if you want, you know, Guide RS brakes and you want, you know, this drivetrain, this color frame, you know, you want a suspension fork, whatever tires, you can literally build your bike online, which we have found to be really, really helpful because every single market is slightly different. So for example, Colorado, that has super lightweight snow, I've learned a lot about moisture content in snow. Who would have thought, right? So we have super lightweight snow. So everybody generally is going to be on a 26-inch diameter tire with the biggest tire that is available. If you get into the Midwest or East Coast, it tends to be much heavier snow that freezes up overnight. So they tend to be on 27.5, narrower, 3.8, 4.0. I mean, these are all things that we've learned. And so the fat bike category, if you will, is getting more sophisticated. The bikes have been out long enough. People really know what they want. Some people are saying bikes are getting expensive. They have been expensive for a while. And so those that want one bike will buy a fat bike with a rigid fork. And then rather than buying a second bike, they will put a front suspension on it, change out the fork, and then they'll put a 27.5 or 29 plus by 2.8 tire set on it for their summer riding. And so like we all used to, well, for those of us that are old, that is, used to put snow tires on their cars in the winter, it's kind of the same concept. You can run a narrower set of wheels, and it more and more people are doing that and using this as their one and only bike.
The customization piece is interesting to me. We have these P2 groups of retailers, so retailers who work closely together to think about, you know, how to make their business more profitable and what the future will bring. And when we are designing the bike store of the future, an exercise we did recently, working in these customization areas within the store was part of that. So I love that you're saying that on the website, the consumer can do that. And then that even work through the retailer, through the delivery, and the margin goes back to the retailer as well. I think there's a lot there. Staying there for a second, just tips for retailers to increase fat bike sales. I have some retailers that are saying that they've noticed a little bit of a slowdown. Any success tips, anything you've seen retailers do in the past that has worked really well that you would share?
Yeah, two things that really move the needle. First and foremost, do a demo day. Just get people out there, have them try it. They'll get an idea of what it's all about. And as I mentioned earlier, the old kind of thoughts they had about riding a heavier bike, that disappears when you get to some of these newer bikes. And the other thing that is really moving the needle is, and we have a course that we tell our dealers, this is how you do this. Bring in a customer, have them ride a bike if you have sort of something close to what they want. Walk them over to our website and build the bike. And so our bike builder not only adjusts price, but it adjusts weight. Mm-hmm. So you can see both. And what's kind of neat is when they're saying, wait a second, for $200 more, they're upselling themselves because they're like, oh, I can lose a pound if I shift from this component to that component. And the dealer just sits there and watches their margin come in. And then they take a screenshot and they simply then send that to us. And the dealer says, please send me one of these. And it's that way because they're not going to have every combination on the floor. We actually have over 30,000 combinations based on our website. So you can't have that all available on your floor.
30,000 combinations. That's pretty spectacular. Yeah.
It keeps production busy. But let's face it, the world has changed. If you're ordering a Tesla or a lot, I mean, the car auto industry has really figured this out. I think we had it figured out first, but they're figuring it out. People are okay waiting 6 to 9 months for their car. And they're saying, hey, I want a white interior. I want this stereo system. I want these tires, these rims, whatever. It's very, very similar. And oh, by the way, here's a deposit. And so COVID has changed things. And the customization is huge. And the way we work is that if a dealer places an order, we will ship that order within 48 hours. So it's not like you've got to wait 6 weeks for that bike to go out the door.
Nobody knows your bike shop better than you, but the people who might come the closest are other bike shop owners who are facing the same day-to-day and long-term challenges that you are. Joining a P2 group is one of the most affordable ways to take a deep dive into your business alongside other bike shop owners who are experts in what you do. Reach out today so we can tell you more about how a P2 group can make a difference in your business.
Wow, that is really quick. There's so much here. You know, I'm thinking about what a retailer offers, and it's that knowledge and expertise and service. So if someone is, you know, excited about a fat bike and then they come into your store as the retailer, you can really plant the seeds of everything that's possible. And then using your website and this tool right with the customer allows the customer to see all the opportunity that's available. And then it just kind of goes like that, right? That's what you're saying. It seems awesome to me.
Yeah, exactly. New opportunities come out every single day. So I'll get somebody saying, hey, what do you think about these brakes? And in terms of a supplier to Borealis, I'll say, you know what? It's not up to me. It's up to my dealers and it's up to my customers. And again, with all of these options that we have, I just simply go into our site. I say, okay, we're going to offer this brake set or this tire or whatever. And then we wait. And if the customers and dealers don't order it, then I just go back to my supplier and say, sorry, there's just no demand for your product. And I don't have to take the risk of bringing it in ahead of time and all of the complications. And the sales job that a supplier might want to put on Borealis kind of goes away, because I always say, let the market see. And it's either price or just demand. And it hones what we offer. And the other part of it is dealers will say, hey, have you ever thought of carrying X? And we say, no, we haven't. And then we'll have a review and we'll try and get that lined up for the next season.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. It's really fun.
Stay ready to pivot and just reactive to what comes at you. Steve, you mentioned the demo rides. And I'm just thinking of rides in general. You know, maybe some retailers don't have demo bikes. And if they don't, I think just increasing, like, host a fat bike ride or post, you know, maybe some images of fat bike worlds on social media, right? Just to get that interest, that spark going. Would you imagine?
Yeah. You know, there's two dealers that come to mind. Aunt Betty's out on Cape Cod and Downwind Sports up in Marquette. Both of those dealers do an amazing job of having a demo fleet. They do demo rides. I've driven up to Marquette a number of times and they promote it. And then they'll do rides and they'll just say, hey, come on with us. No obligation, no fees, no nothing. Just go out and have a good time. And their conversion rate from just doing something as simple as just like, hey, let's go on the beach and go for a ride, or let's go out into the woods of, you know, Marquette, Michigan, which is amazing, by the way, just speaks for itself. That's the best selling tool that I've seen.
What about the education piece? You spoke a little bit about your knowledge of snow density, but I'm thinking, like, you know, I got my Crestone and it came with the tires set up the way, like, it came set the way it was. And I would never even, you know, I don't know. I don't think about those things of, like, changing out the tires or even just, like, how much tire pressure should be on a fat bike, right? So if retailers are selling fat bikes, but maybe they're not, you know, their techs really aren't up to speed on all the, you know, different technical things that come with selling a fat bike. Is there a good resource for this, or does someone on your team help with that?
So we always make ourselves available. If any dealer on the sales side or on the production side, their techs, if they have questions, they can always call us. We've done a few Zoom calls and we will do that for both the sales side. And generally on the sales side, as I mentioned, it's like, hey, take your customer, build your bike online. But on the production side, we'll have a bike in the stand and we'll say, hey, this is what we're seeing. you know, this is, you know, maybe there's an issue with setup. Hey, this is the way to fix that. Or here, this is what we can do in terms of swapping out tires. Or, oh, by the way, this is what a bike looks like if it's set up for summer versus winter. And so we make ourselves available for that. I'm sure there's a lot of dealers that have become very, very savvy about what their area needs for in terms of a fat bike. So 10 years ago, there was a lot of education going on. Today, it's just more of a known product. So less of that is going on. But it's kind of fun to work with the sales team saying, hey, have you thought of X? And they're like, oh, no, that's great. And then you immediately see a bump in their sales, which is cool.
Yeah, right. Just those little new nuggets that we learn. So what's the response been to the prototype Eve? I mean, the retailers that you've talked to about it, or how's that been?
Yeah. So it's funny. So we literally got the official painted frame 2 weeks ago. I was hoping to have it build up for Worlds, but this is a big, big event. And the reality is all the prep time just took too much time away from production to build, you know, bring the 30 bikes. So we didn't have it built up. But what we've told every dealer is we're bringing in 200, and that's it for this year. And what we're doing is we're saying, if you want one, you've got to put a $1,000 non-refundable deposit down. And the reason for that is because a lot of cancellations are going on right now. If you look at a lot of the suppliers, you know, SRAM, Shimano, you know, Hayes, MTB, whatever, WTB, they're not allowing cancellations. And if they are, you know, there's massive cancellations and purchase orders. So we can't, I can't lock up a bike and then not have a dealer take it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, some of that has to do with, you know, this potential discussion of a recession coming. A lot of shops are, you know, cash is tight because they have so much inventory on the floor. We just have to make sure if they're ordering one, they're serious about it. There's a minor pain if they do cancel. But that being said, we have two dealers up in Alaska. As you can imagine, they both said, yeah, we'll take, I don't know, one said, we'll take up to 30 if it really is as good as you say it is. The other one is, you know, saying 10 or 20. Every dealer we've spoken with have said they will take at least two. And then when I talk with people just like you, there's a lot of those people that say, put me down for a while.
You got my side text, right?
Right. So, you know, the proof will always be in the pudding when they actually give me their credit cards. And our spec sheet, if you will, with the photos should be going out in the next 2 weeks. So we'll see. But we're very optimistic based on all of the discussions we've had.
Really, really exciting. You know, talking about the current state of the industry, inventory levels, this is how we have to take the deposits ahead of time. Any thoughts, you know, from your conversations with retailers, your suppliers, when we're going to get back to some sort of normal? I know it's like a magic eight ball on that, but what are you thinking for the industry?
Yeah, well, our inventory is high today because I had to buy this stuff a year and a half to 2 years ago. And I was thinking we would have had one more season of just mind-blowing sales. And so I've been off about 6 months in terms of planning for Borealis fat bikes. Going forward, what I'm hearing is that some brands are already discounting products that aren't even on shore yet. They're just still shipping from China. As I mentioned, dealers have too much inventory. These are direct conversations I've had with many of our dealers. They've got too much inventory. They don't know where to put it, which has limited the number of fat bikes that they can bring in because they finally got all their bikes in spring and summer and they just simply didn't have the room or they didn't have the cash to bring in more products. So if I'm going to throw a dart, I'm going to say it's probably a year from April till the system re-levels. Yeah. That's, I will preface that with I have a degree in economics. So I actually watch this stuff pretty quick, but I don't know. There's a lot of variables that can change that. People are going to be really conservative. The other thing that is going to potentially help that length of time and bring it sooner is that almost every single supplier we work with is back down to pre-COVID lead time, and many of which are much faster. So, you know, SRAM is back down to a 30-day lead time, which is unbelievable. So I don't have to buy anything until I absolutely need it. And like I said, a lot of the suppliers are back down. There are exceptions to that. But in the large scheme of things, we're back down to pre-COVID lead times.
Lots of inventory. I will say what I've been hearing echoes what you're saying with the retailers, and many are even building bikes and trying to put them back in the boxes so they can, you know, have some space. Hopefully we'll get more riders in the door, get, you know, the boom happening again and move some of that inventory. Switching gears a little bit, did I hear that you purchased a tire company last year?
I did. Yeah. We purchased Terrain Tires, which I'm very, very excited about. And had you asked me 2 years ago if I ever wanted a tire company, I would have said, what are you thinking? You know, so there were very strategic reasons for buying Terrain. The first issue was Terrain was potentially going to have some issues that might not have worked for Borealis. And so we were concerned about whether we were going to rely on Terrain long term. And then Maxxis had told us that they had left the category. And so Maxxis will no longer be making fat bike tires. They were going to basically work through the purchase orders they had in their system. So I think their last shipments are going out like right now. And then that's it. So we were concerned about Maxxis going away. And then at that point, it really leaves us down to just a couple of brands, one of which is very good, but difficult to work with. And then the others are just not at the quality that we want on a Borealis bike, and or they didn't offer the 27.5 widths. So it was more of a strategic self-preservation. It's hard to sell a bike without tires. And I will tell you, tires are everything. I almost always will start a discussion with a potential customer. Let's talk about the tires. What do you ride on? Where are you located? Are you on groomed trails? Are you breaking trail? And then we figure out the tires, and then we build up the bike from there.
Yeah, the rubber tech is a big thing. I mean, how has it been to just get to know rubber? I mean, do you have a background in this or?
No. And what makes it even harder is with COVID, I can't get into China, which is where they're made. And, you know, just as of, I don't know, a month or two ago, they have reduced the quarantine time from 2 weeks down to 1 week, but there still is the potential that you can get stuck there. So I haven't been there. We've done a lot of Zoom calls. I've been walked around the factory with a camera. So it's a little unnerving buying a company that I've actually never visited, but it's actually working out really, really well. We've got some great customers. And ironically, many of them are competitors to Borealis. So we had to make it very, very clear that Terrain is a completely separate company. Yes, I own it, but it has its own P&L, its own investment strategy, et cetera. And we will treat our best customers like our best customers. And if their order was placed before Borealis, Borealis doesn't get to jump to the front of the line because of the relationship. And we will make sure that that is loud and clear. You know, we were working with Rocky Mountain the other day and, you know, great brand, great customer. And, you know, LTP, which also owns Norco. I mean, these are great companies with great brands, and they produce products in large part that are really not competitive to Borealis because they just serve a different market. We're not a big player up in Canada, so there's not a lot of concern for the competition. But we're trying to service them and keep the same level of quality and service that Borealis has always had, and then just transition that into the Terrain side. It's been really cool. It's been fun.
I have heard fantastic things about the tech shield that Terrain use, the reinforcement for the tires. They seem to be really strong and really durable. For our listeners, it's terraintires.com, and we will link in the show notes there as well. But congratulations. That's a big move and a fun undertaking, I'm sure. And you still are looking for retailers for Terrain as well, correct?
Yep, retailers and distributors. One of the things that we've been able to do, just we have a little bit more capital than the prior owners. So we have close to, $400,000 worth of tires, you know, just sitting in our inventory in Colorado. And we will carry that year round. Not that dissimilar than Borealis, where we always say we have the largest inventory at all times. Our plan is to do the same with the Terrain tire side. So if a dealer needs product, we have it in Colorado. If a distributor needs product, it makes more sense to bring in large quantities direct from China. But in the event that they have a hole, chances are we can fill whatever hole that is in their inventory from Colorado supply.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's fun. We have a big sign on our door that goes into the warehouse for the tires that says Global Headquarters for Terrains. Yeah, it's fun.
All right. So you are recording with me this podcast. I know you're at Fat Bike World. You're in the mobile unit. What's happening the next couple of days? What's happening today? You know, Fat Bike World, tell me what the scoop is.
Yeah, so we're at the New Richmond Golf Club right now. We just pulled in just shortly before you and I started this call. And so we're getting the demo bikes out, including the two e-bikes, and everybody has the opportunity to go ride the course. And what's really nice about today is about 2 inches of snow fell last night. It's 28 degrees out. It's overcast, but that's pretty normal for the Midwest this time of year. So today's going to be great. Tomorrow, which is really cool, is it's a sold out field. So they stopped taking registrations at 300. And then there were 50 additional registrations for elite. So there's 350 racers. That's the max that they said that they could support, which is really cool. The only downside is we think it's going to be about 2 degrees. We just got to keep everybody warm. So that's tomorrow. The race starts at 10 o'clock. There's going to be the elite women's wave. We decided this year to start, I think it's 5 minutes ahead of the pack to give the ladies fresh snow, fresh groomed track, which I think is kind of fun. Then the men's elite wave will go. They get staged just at front of the pack. And then at noon, there actually is an e-bike race. I think there's like 8 or 10 e-bikes. I'm not sure how everybody's going to check max speed on these things, but it'll be fun. You know, it's just something kind of cool and fun. And I think somebody put up $500. Actually, Lemire Cycles, who's doing full suspension fat e-bikes, put up some prize money. So I think it's going to be great fun. The only, and I hate to say tragic part of all of this, is on Sunday, there's a little kids race, like 5 and under, like 3 to 5. Which is so fun. We did it last year, but I think the high on Sunday is going to be like minus 10. So I don't know if we're going to do that. I just don't think the kids are going to be out there in minus 10 degrees. But yeah, there's, you know, so the 45th Parallel Distillery is kind of a home base for everybody. So there's a big party there. Tureen is sponsoring the party tonight. And then it's Anderson's Pure Maple Syrup is the presenting sponsor. So they're doing a presenting sponsor pancake breakfast Sunday morning, and it's at a distillery. One of the things I've always said about being the title sponsor is this is about fun. We just want everybody to have a good time, you know, not take themselves too seriously, you know, other than the elite racers, take yourself seriously for the 2 hours you're out there, but then put on some warm clothes and come on in and grab a shot of gin or brandy or something, bourbon, whiskey. Oh, they also make limoncello and orange cello, whatever your flavor is.
It's like a great time. I hope it warms up for the kiddos.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really the only thing I worry about. Those kids, they freeze quickly.
Well, I can't believe it's been like 9-10 years since we first met, and it's been awesome to watch you grow and myself. I feel like we're pretty cool people. We're doing it. Okay. So.
Yeah. And it's a fun industry. It's really pretty amazing.
It is. If our listeners have additional questions about Borealis or Tureen or just want to say hi, is there a contact that you would share?
Sure. So my email, if you want to reach out to me directly, it's super easy. It's just steve@fatbike.com. Or if you want on the tire side, it's just steve@tureentires.com. And the phone number for both companies is just area code 320. And then it's Fatbike, 320 Fatbike. We're all things fat bike. That's all we do.
Steve, thank you so much for taking time. And I hope you have a fantastic time at Fat Bike World and have a shot for me for sure.
I will. I will. What is your flavor of choice?
Oh, I don't know. The gin sounded pretty good.
Okay. All right. I'll make sure that happens for you. Anyway. Yeah. Thanks so much. This is really fun. It's great seeing you again virtually, but we need to get together soon.
Definitely. Definitely.
Thank you for listening to Bicycle Retail Radio. This podcast is designed specifically for the bicycle industry, dedicated to strengthening our retailers and cycling community. If it is your first episode, we urge you to take the time and listen to our past episodes. Support the show by first subscribing, then share your favorite episode online with friends. you can go one step further and leave a review. It helps members of our industry find our podcast. Special thanks to NBDA Development Director Rochelle Scouten for editing and promotional graphics. Music provided by Joel Picard.